Welcome back to DougHammock.com and to this podcast project on rethinking sex education. It's been some time since I posted, finished two sections, and then took a rather extended break before this third one that we begin today. A lot of things were going on here at the church that I'm part of. We were kind of given the boot from our denomination and had to move out of our building, and that took up a lot of bandwidth. But also, I've been working on writing these episodes and doing a lot of thinking about them. So I'm getting back to it now, and as we were doing, each week I'll post some thoughts here. My hope is to get a conversation started about hammering out a viable, a helpful way to educate our young people about sexuality, because what we're doing right now in the church and as a society really isn't working. And I hope you'll join in. I hope you'll comment. I do want to thank those many who have in the past, and I hope you'll resume now that we resume our project. And again, at the end of the project, I'll turn what we learned together into a book. So let's begin. Let's begin with this week's episode. The title is really just Introduction to the Third Section. So we'll begin here. I'm a minister, and I love the people in my community. For years, I've sat across from them, many of them, as their lives are unraveling around sexual troubles, because, you know, people screw up their lives with sex all the time. And as we saw in a previous episode, when they do, they also screw up society. How we handle our genitals reaches far beyond what happens in bed. It affects our society's economics, our governmental policies, our social fabric, which is also true in our children's lives. What they do with their genitals has broad impact on much of their lives. And if we don't talk to them about it, if we aren't the voice of sexual wisdom in their lives, we leave them to the wisdom of a society that really isn't faring well on the subject these days. Now, I've been a minister long enough that the children I remember as babies have reached their sexual maturity and are having their own children. This project was motivated by a deep love for them. As our young people are starting a new generation, can we stave off sexual pain and sexual troubles for them and for their children? So this third section of the podcast is about real-life sexual conversations that we have with our young people. I've organized it around questions people ask me all the time. Each episode will offer some practical advice about having conversations about these real-life sex issues and the conversations that go with them. I'll frame an approach to several of the conversations along these lines. We'll talk about how to talk to our kids about masturbation. That's a question that comes up a lot. We'll look at the conversation about pornography and about sexual touch, how much sexual touch, how soon sexual touch, assigning appropriate value and gravity to the touch. Now, to prepare to have these nitty-gritty conversations, we'll draw heavily on the background that I laid out in the last two sections. I have a friend who's been reading these episodes before I post them. When I was working on the first two sections, she kept encouraging me to hurry to get to this part. She knew a bunch of parents who needed practical help right now. Well, she was impatient as I was talking about the second century because she knew some middle school parents who needed to have sex talks with their kids right now. But as we'll see, it's really going to be difficult to talk about the day-to-day sexual stuff without referencing the history that got us here. So we'll discuss pornography. In order to do that well, in order to have that conversation, we'll need to be positioned in the full sexual journey that we discussed in part one. We'll talk about something as mundane as masturbation, but you'll see we need to name the often unspoken instincts that Western society picked up over the centuries, the ones that we discussed in part two. So we'll reference the last two sections pretty heavily. And if you haven't listened to them, I do encourage you to go back. They'll help us talk about the gritty details with our young kids. We don't have to give our kids a history lesson every time we talk to them about sex, but we do want to feel on solid historical ground, on scientific ground. We want to be able to have an informed understanding to shape our views of sexual health and sexual well-being. So now, as we've said before, sex is difficult to talk about for a lot of people. It's often embarrassing. It's such an intimate part of our lives, and the hurt that we accrue when it goes badly goes so deep that it's difficult to talk about. On top of that, church and society, both having lost their way, don't have much prescripted wisdom to help us have these conversations, so it's just tough. But we love our young people, And that's what pushes us to do this tough thing, because if we get it right, we give them access to a wonderful gift. They grow up comfortable in their bodies. They grow up comfortable in their sexuality. They access a sexual journey that helps them experience fulfillment over a lifetime. But if we get it wrong, they don't. We want our young people to be comfortable with their innocence, their nakedness, for example. But we also want them to know that they can't run around naked at their friend's house. So how do we talk to them about the latter without undercutting the former? It's these kinds of practical things. We love our young people. One father said it to me this way. I got to figure this out. I don't want my most significant conversations about sexuality to start when I start teaching them about sexual predators. Yeah, we got to get this thing right. One mom framed her concern like this. We have to figure this out because I don't want my girls to carry the body shame into their lives the way that I've carried body shame into my own. Talking about sex, it's important and it's difficult. So we've got to figure this out. I put out a Survey Monkey to help get ready for this project. And one of the things that I asked on the survey was, why is it so hard to talk to young people about sex? And the answers ranged widely. But for the most part, their difficulties really did have roots in the history that we've seen in these last few sections, especially church history. The instincts that we carry around often betray us. But we haven't picked up new instincts yet, healthy ones yet. The ones that our society has to offer, they're not working much better than the old religious ones. All of which makes us fearful around the topic. It makes us feel uncertain around the topic. One parent responded to the survey saying, look, sex has been a hurtful experience for me. I've got my own sex hang-ups. I know that. And I sure don't want to pass them along and taint my kids. If I get this wrong, I could mess them up for their lives. Another spoke for many and said on the survey, I used to know what to say about sex. It used to be all about the rules, and the rules were clear. Do this thing, don't do that. But now I'm not sure I believe the rules anymore, and I can't tell my kids something that I don't believe myself, and I don't even know what I believe. Or another one of the concerns that came out in the survey. Once I talk to my kids, I'll put sex on their radar, and it might take away some of their innocence, or it might stimulate their interest too early. And oh man, that's a can of worms I'm not ready for. Well, history tends to swing like a pendulum, and here in the West, sex has been one of those pendulum swinging issues. When we get out of balance on the repressing dirty sex side of the pendulum, for example, it's not long before some generation sees how silly that is and in kind of a reactionary way swings to the opposite extreme. That's how pendulums go. So to talk to our young people well, we need to guard against swinging from out of balance to counterbalance, which is why informing ourselves with the ancient past and the sciences, why this has been such important background. To prepare to speak with our children, most of us have to rethink sexuality for ourselves. We live in that moment in which the world around us is changing and requires that of us. And we need a solid foundation ourselves to inform the talks that we're going to have with our kids. So again, if you didn't listen to the last two sections, I really do encourage you to. The purpose was to inform the context to help us have an informed understanding ourselves so that we have something solid and something helpful to offer our young people, because our children need us to get this right. When I was a young man, I was fortunate to be surrounded by a bunch of older, free-thinking church ladies. Some were extended family members, others were family members of my youth leaders, a couple were bosses at jobs that I had when I was in college. And once these ladies found out that I was going to become a minister, they decided that somebody needed to teach me about healthy sex. And so they decided it was up to them. So it was during the years when so many ministers were getting caught up in sex scandals, so maybe they were trying to save me from a similar fate, but whatever the reason, they took up the task. And they didn't use the Greek words that we talked about in section one, but they did teach me about the wholeness of the sexual journey. They taught me not to settle for just the erotic part of sex, but to put the eroticism into a larger relational character growth context. Some of them got pretty specific. They told me that when I found a young woman to be with, it would take time to get good at sex, years, they said. And they told me that sex would get a whole lot better through those years. And it would get better as we learned not only one another's bodies, but also as we became deeper friends. It would be better as we became better people, because better people make better lovers. It would get better, they told me, not only as we learned one another's sexual rhythms, but also as we learned to love one another's hearts. They didn't say much about the words pragma or philos or agape, but they did teach me that sex was a much bigger construct than penises and vaginas. They talked about wild and passionate arguments and the sexuality that was woven into making up. They told me that sexual passion would ebb and flow through the years, but it would come back through those same years, and that would make the flowing times much more precious. I mean, really, this started when I was just a teenager. What were they thinking? But then in my college years, some of the ladies rotated out, and some new ones rotated in. And as my own sexual journey was unfolding, they told me that I would have a lot to learn if I wanted to love my wife well, or if I wanted to make love to my wife well. And sometimes they would giggle together when they were talking to me, and sometimes they'd roll their eyes. But they talked to me about the importance of a slow hand. We'll see that in this section. I'll talk about the different ways that men, they talked about the different ways that men and women are aroused. And they especially emphasized that sex would be a whole lot better if I was cheerful when I washed the dishes or when I changed the diapers. And they were frank, and they were honest, and sometimes they were a little bit bawdy. And they warned me that if I wanted to be good at sex, I'd have to slow down. They warned me that I'd have to see beyond my own pleasure and practice sex as a shared experience. They told me how important it was to be gentle and patient and mindful of my partner's needs. So I'm really glad my church ladies thought I needed to know this stuff. I learned a lot from these auntie, these grandmotherly ladies. They pointed me toward a bigger picture than I had in mind as a young man. Now, at the time, sex was a fiery passion in my belly. Of course, I was young. To my fiery passion, these ladies brought a balancing perspective. They helped me understand how inextricably connected eroticism is to relationship. They impressed on me how important it is to experience erotic love in the broader context of a long-term relationship-building process. Without being preachy, they taught me about trustworthiness and fidelity. They taught me about conflict resolution. They taught me how to create a framework into which successful erotic love would fit. These ladies spawned a deep desire inside of me for the whole sexual journey. They gave me the motivation to keep learning until I got it right. The fiery passion of sexual intercourse, that was already awakened. They awakened the desire for the slow-burning passion that grows deeper over a lifetime. And so I'll always be grateful to my body church ladies. They unapologetically spoke to me about sex. They helped me understand the difference between having sex and making love. Now, I'm not unaware what a rare experience this was. I was fortunate. My experience of older, wiser people having a context in which they could give me the bigger sexual perspective and prepare me for life, that's not the only way it could have gone. Sometimes older people sexually exploit the young. Sometimes instead of support and wisdom, they cause pain and damage. And because we've all heard the horror stories, young people don't expect the kind of input from their elders that my church ladies gave to me. But neither do older people feel the freedom to offer it to young people. That's just one of the tragedies of this moment, this culture that we live in. So one of the challenges we face is how to create the spaces in which older, wiser people can help prepare the young for the sexual journey without exposing them to danger. So again, my experience with the church ladies was uncommon. I think they felt the liberty they did because the church afforded them safety and a secure status in the community. They felt the freedom, I think, because they felt the responsibility. Their place in the church gave them a standing which today is rare, especially around an issue as volatile as sex. Most likely, if our children are going to get input from older and wiser people, it's not going to be from church ladies, as I got to experience. It's going to be from parents. Maybe grandparents, perhaps extended family, sometimes youth group leaders. But so most of the questions that frame this section came from people who are in those positions in life, people who have direct charge over the lives of youngsters. So it is for you, for the parents, for the grandparents, for the families and the youth leaders that I'm writing this last section. Actually, it's why I wrote the last two sections as well. Those last two sections in particular, they certainly were not written for kids. I mean, what kid, overrun by hormones and passion, is interested in ancient Greek words or hard-hearted 5th century bishops? But kids are interested, they're keenly interested in stories, your stories. Especially if your stories can be stripped of the toxic instincts that we've explored thus far in the project. Especially if your stories can be stripped of the harsh recrimination that usually goes with religious sex education. Young people are interested in stories about how real people have integrated ancient wisdom into the sexual journey and have either tapped into that wisdom or missed it and learned what could have been a better way. Stories, we'll see, are powerful. And if we can make these conversations safe, stories and sexual advice, offering the accumulated wisdom of those who've gone before us, these have a powerful shaping effect in a young person's life. I know this from personal experience. It's what happened for me. Healthy, loving community is the best place to talk about sexuality, but it takes a high degree of trust, we'll see, and trustworthiness. In our own church community here in Raleigh, we're working hard to rebuild a trusting, trustworthy community, and hopefully bring community involvement back into the process of preparing our children for what lies ahead. But still, most likely, these sexual conversations will take place at home, maybe in the church. But even there, these conversations are tough, which is why we're doing this third section to talk about the conversations that we will need to have with our kids. We want to get ready for the challenge set before us. All right, we'll pick up here next week with the conversations. And as always, let me know what you think on the Facebook, on the website itself. I'd love to hear what you're thinking.